This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
As we transition towards endemicity, the Ministry of Health will be releasing a national COVID-19 testing strategy, and this will give detailed guidelines on the frequency and the testing requirements for COVID-19. Now, this strategy hasn't been made public yet, although last week Health Minister Khairi Jamaluddin did mention it would be out soon. So we're keeping our eyes peeled for that.
Meanwhile, the government has begun administering Pfizer booster shots to eligible individuals who completed their two doses of the Sinovac vaccine at least 3 months ago or the Pfizer vaccine 6 months ago. Now, this booster vaccination drive is administered voluntarily. And last week, Pfizer announced that the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine showed 90.7% efficacy against the coronavirus in a clinical trial of children between 5 to 11 years old and have asked the US FDA to authorize it for emergency use. So the question is, as we learn to live with COVID-19, what are the important strategies for us as a country to ensure that this virus does not overwhelm our healthcare system?
So joining us on the line to discuss this is Dr. Vinod Balasubramaniam, Senior Lecturer and Co-Lead of Infection and Immunity Research Strength at the Jeffrey Chia School of Medicine and Health Sciences. Good morning, Dr. Vinod. Happy Monday. Now, let's start with the national testing policy. It's yet to be rolled out, but ideally, what should be included if we were to treat COVID-19 as endemic?
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me. So the war against COVID-19 is far from over, right? Now, recently we had the interstate traveling reinstated. We had many other restrictions lifted, right? We must be ever vigilant now in preventing future outbreaks, right? Especially in maintaining SOPs, the basic SOPs such as face masks, proper distancing, hand hygiene, right? As we transition to the endemic phase. I feel that the lack of robust testing, tracing, isolation and support system remains the weakest link in Malaysia's pandemic management strategy, right? Testing is necessary to stop COVID-19 transmission and navigate the nation's transition from mitigation back to containment in specific localities, right? In specific places when necessary. Contact tracing and isolation reduces the risk of the virus spreading into communities, right? This is really, really important. We must understand that a national COVID-19 testing strategy must also include a comprehensive, at the same time, practical isolation and surveillance plans. Right. If you look at test, trace, isolate, and support, right? This is what the core is, right? How do we make sure that they are properly isolated, right? What is our surveillance method for them to be isolated? And do we have a monitoring system where we can have community surveillance with participation from all stakeholders? You're looking at neighborhood, state representative, village representative committees, enforcement officers. All this. This is one a part of it. Second part of it. Can we automate contact tracing efforts using MySejahtera? Something to ponder, right? For example, in Singapore, they have something which is called the Trace Together and the Trace Together token, where if you cross each other, if you're a close contact, the token will ping the data to your phone, right? That way, you don't miss any of the contacts and you have an automated targeted tracing approach. It's something to ponder.
And Dr. Vinod, can we zoom in on specifically testing? How should it be done? Should there be specific SOPs for people who are working, for people who are in schools, for example? Should it be once a week, twice a week? And of course, the million-dollar question, the test kits themselves, should they be priced much lower or even made available for free for certain segments of society?
Absolutely, absolutely. First of all, the ceiling price should go down even further and should be made free for B40 group, right? That is the first. This is to encourage people to test more. And there should be a specific SOPs at different localities, workplace, right, which is one of the major clusters in our previous waves, right, and also school. Now that schooling is open, I think it's really, really pertinent that we have specific SOPs for all these places, especially workplace and school.
All right, then, Dr. Vinod, let's turn our attention to another element of, I suppose, living with the virus, and that is regarding vaccination. And we're seeing our vaccination rates reach almost 95% of the adult population, which is no small feat. But at the same time, in terms of booster shots, we are seeing that the pickup may not be as robust, perhaps. And what's your assessment of how the booster shot rollout is being implemented? And do you think that it might need to be expanded to more than just the specific targeted group that's being implemented at the moment?
So when you talk about booster doses, right? Booster doses from different types of vaccine may provide better protection against COVID-19 and its variants. government recently announced the mix and matching of booster doses. I think that is the way forward, right? Because we know that mRNA vaccines are really good at inducing antibody responses. We know that the vector-based vaccines like AstraZeneca is better at triggering T-cell responses, which is part of our adaptive immunity, right? So I think that is a good way, right? Now, sustainability of a vaccine-related immunity, how much of immunity we get is dependent on how the individual, specific individual, responds to the vaccine, right? How efficient, how effective the T-cell response, whether the virus mutates over time and evade any kind of antibodies produced by the primary vaccination. These are all important factors to zero in, right? Keeping all these factors into consideration, vaccine-induced immunity may wane in terms of antibody levels or in terms of protection risk. And we are seeing from real-world data that Pfizer vaccine immunity wanes after 6 months. We're seeing studies in Israel, studies in Europe, right? So at some point, we might need booster doses to keep our immune level in check, especially when there is a newer variant emerging.
Do you then think it should be made compulsory? Because currently it is voluntary.
If compulsory to a certain groups, yes, right? Especially people who are immunocompromised, people who are suffering from certain types of cancer, right? People are suffering from certain types of infectious, immune-related infectious diseases, like, for example, HIV, right? Because immunocompromised people don't always build the same level of immunity after vaccination the way non-immunocompromised people do. So for this group, yes. For now, all the other vaccines look to provide certain amount or decent amount of protection, including Delta, right? That equation might change in the future. We are looking at new lineages from the Delta, which may evade antibodies. So that is something a food for thought.
Dr. Vinod, turning attention to the vaccination of children, I mean, Pfizer and BioNTech have asked the US FDA to authorize emergency use of their COVID-19 vaccine for children aged 5 to 12. Do you see Malaysia's NPRA taking a similar approach and making a consideration on this matter?
Absolutely. We need a holistic approach in fighting COVID-19. Those who are not vaccinated, including this vulnerable group, right? Teenagers, adolescents, and children from 5 to 11, represents a reservoir for the virus, right? Now, data show that children and particularly adolescents can play a significant part in the coronavirus transmission, right? It is possible that more transmissible variants will develop a way to push through whatever the young immune system poses, right? They are making them more resistant to infection, right? And research have shown, latest data from FDA and Pfizer have shown that the vaccine is more than 90% effective. It has a better reactogenicity profile, right? There are much lesser side effects. So yes, it is a good idea.
Now, meanwhile, Minister of Health Kari Jamaluddin warned politicians to mask up as they are probably obese and have existing comorbidities. But in general, I mean, how important is it to be healthy and fit when it comes to COVID-19?
It is really important, right? Because we have evidence from the global outbreak of the SARS-CoV-2 clearly demonstrated that individuals with pre-existing comorbidities, I'm looking at hyperlipidemia, obesity, diabetes, people who have risk of cardiovascular diseases, right? They are at much greater risk of dying from COVID-19, right? Because this poses a major challenge for global healthcare systems and biomedical research, right? Why? There are a number of reasons why people with diabetes or obesity are more likely to develop severe COVID-19. First of all, look at chronic inflammation, which is already present in this group of people, right? And this increases their susceptibility to even further hyperinflammation and development of various anomalies like cytokine storm when you are infected with COVID-19 compared to people who don't have these comorbidities. This is the reason why. Staying fit and healthy is important.
On that note, Dr. Vinod, thanks so much for your comments this morning. That was Dr. Vinod Balasubramaniam, Senior Lecturer and Co-Lead of Infection and Immunity Research Strength at the Jeffrey Chia School of Medicine and Health Sciences, emphasizing the importance of staying healthy and fit in this COVID-19 pandemic as we move towards the endemic stage.
Yeah, the other thing I want to highlight actually is the fact that the Ministry of Health has recently announced certain data, which is a little bit worrying, and that is our outpatient visits to public health clinics were down 17.5%. because people are worried about COVID-19. Now, the danger of this is that you might have a pre-existing condition and that won't be picked up if you didn't go for your regular checkups. So what does this mean later on? And, you know, in 1 year, 2 years time, are we going to see a surge in, let's say, cancer cases, possibly because people didn't have early detection?
That's right. So the effects of the pandemic go just beyond the COVID-19 virus, but really how it trickles down onto how we treat health overall. Something to be aware of.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.